So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 31, entitled The Movements of the Living Entity, Text Number 3. Masena tu shiro dvabhyam Bao angriya janga vigraha. Nakalomasti charmani Linga chidro bhavastribe Masena tushiro dvabhyam Bhavangrada. Sorry, this is a little difficult. Bhavangyadyanga vigraha Bhavangyadang. So we try it again. Bhavangriyadanga vigraha. It all joins, huh? Bhavangriyadanga. Bhavangriyadanga vigraha. Yeah. It is not just adyanga, it becomes angriyadanga. Angriya Janga Vigraha. Bhavyangriya Janga Vigraha. A tongue twister. Masena tusiru dvabhyam Bhavangja Janga Vigraha. Nakalomasti charmani Linga chidro bhavastibi. I think we'll leave it as it is. In the course of a month, a head is formed, and at the end of 2 months, the hands, feet, and other limbs take shape. By the end of 3 months, the nails, fingers, toes, body, hairs, bones, and skin appear, as do the organ of generation and the other apertures in the body, namely the eyes, nostril, ears, mouth, and anus. Text 4. Chaturbir davata sapta panchabik sutritutpava sadbirjara yunavita kuksubram yati takshine. Within 4 months from the date of conception, the 7 essential ingredients of the body, namely child. What is child? Blood, flesh, fat, bone, marrow, and semen come into existence. At the end of the 5 months, hunger and thirst make themselves felt, and at the end of 6 months, the fetus, enclosed by the amnion, begins to move on the right side of the abdomen. Purport. When the body of the child is completely formed, at the end of 6 months, the child, if he is a male, begins to move on the right side, and if female, she tries to move on the left side. The whole world is agitated by the motive passion. And therefore, in the whole world, everything is dictated by lust. And therefore, in the whole world, children are produced as a byproduct of passions that are felt between men and women to fulfill their own desires. In the whole world, it is lacking that parents are considering that now we will create an ashram, a shelter, a place where spiritual life can be cultivated. And now, within this ashram, we'll attract a child under the most favorable conditions, so that this child can grow up and dedicate its life to the service of the Lord and become free from all anxiety and become situated in true happiness. This is lacking in the whole world. So this movement is so nice because it takes away all the passion of the world. It calms down everything to the point where it is not required anymore to create so much anxiety and agitation. but where one can just say, be peaceful, accept Krishna's arrangements, follow his directions, live an honest life, be tolerant of some unavoidable hardships, but otherwise go forward and render service to the Lord. And in this way, everything becomes all auspicious. It is explained that devotion, this is the nature of devotional service. It is Kesh Agni and Subhada. It automatically destroys all types of suffering. And it is Subhada. It makes everything auspicious. So, in this way, by the auspicious nature of devotional service, children can actually find shelter, true shelter. Shelter means Asraya. Asraya means Krishna. The living entity is Asrita, or shelter seeking. And Krishna is the only one that can actually give shelter. Iko bahunam yuvidadati kamam nichanichanam chetanas chetananam. There is only one who can maintain all others. That is Vishwambar, he who maintains the entire universe. Lord Vishwambar is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the maintainer of the entire universe. Lord Vishwambar is none other than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is our maintainer. He is our sustainer. Without Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is no question that we can do anything. The senses are very strong, and so easily one is diverted from proper activity. Lust is so tricky. It can so easily creep in again and again and take us over. Therefore, we need shelter. And a child needs shelter, because a child is bound to make mistakes. In the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is arguing with Krishna. And at that point, Arjuna is saying to Krishna that if we fight, what will be the gain of this? Rather, by fighting, all the elders in the world will be killed. And when the elders will be killed, then the younger generation will surely go astray. Yes, because when one is young, the passions may be very strong and the facility for enjoyment appears to be so much available. At older age, one has already tried to enjoy so many times and knows, well, there are limitations in this world. This is wisdom. Someone who suffers a lot, right, can gain wisdom at an early age and can see that this material world, it's not hell per se, because we can render devotional service. And because we can render devotional service, everything can become worthwhile. Rendering service to Krishna makes life worthwhile. So many things are going on. So many points are raised. So many things are said. So many things are done with great force. Hiranyakasipu, with all his force and might, established his supremacy in the entire universe. He did not tolerate any challenge to his authority. But Hiranyakasipu did not remain for very long. Although at one point it seemed that in the presence of Hiranyakasipu, even the devotees were in adverse conditions. It is said that even Narada Muni at that time when Hiranyakasipu was at the peak of its power, when he was controlling the three worlds, even Narada had to curtail his free preaching for a while, apparently. Of course, Narada could have stood up against Hiranyakasipu. And always we know that Brahma Tejas, or the power of the Brahmana, is greater than the power of the Kshatriya. The power of the Kshatriya is obviously a major thing. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Suryam Tejadritir Daksham Yudhi Apalayanam, that the Kshatriya is very expert. Is very expert, and he has great power. Tejas is very powerful, and the Kshatriya is always ready to stand up and fight, not to pick a quarrel, but to stand up and fight to protect religious interest. Danam isvara bhavam cha. He is charitable, and he is inclined towards control. Isvara bhav. By nature, he is meant to control. So in this world, many kings have come, and many kings have fought, and so much agitation has been there, and many men have taken birth, and many men have not understood the purpose of life in so many countries, in so many conditions of life. Many children have been educated, but they have not been taught what the duties of life really are. So many kings have failed to perform their duties, and children again and again are formed within the womb, sometimes unwanted, sometimes aborted, sometimes again and again. Harisori Prabhu mentioned to Srila Prabhupada when he was his servant that he was somehow or other an accident. He wasn't meant to be conceived, and that his grandmother had advised his mother to have an abortion. Right? And the child was supposed to be aborted, and it was a narrow escape. Right? And Prabhupada said, "Just see." Big round eyes, just see the state of affairs. Right? So the state of affairs is one where even the innocent child in the womb is not safe. And men are ready to go to war, but not a war of Dharma. Right? Not a war where innocent women and children are protected, and where a child receives all shelter, which is appropriate, as is stated in Vedic culture, that the women, children, old people, cows, and which is the fifth? Brahmanas. Thank you very much. Always need to be protected. Yes, always need to be protected. This is the nature of Dharma. So when Dharma rules in society, then the helpless can find proper protection. Children are helpless, and they require protection from before birth and after. They don't just need protection from others, they need protection from themselves. Because their own ignorance will entangle them in so many ways in the material energy. Therefore, children need enlightened parents. And otherwise, guru nasasyat, pita nasasyat, svajani nasasyat, that one should not become a spiritual master, one should not become a parent if one cannot deliver his dependents. Of course, we are insignificant jivas, insignificant, tiny, infinitesimal living entities. What power do we have? Purusam nrisu, whatever power we have is the power that has been given to us by the Supreme Lord, and nothing more. We are therefore only His instrument. Everyone, ye yatamam papadyam titam stativa bhajami aham mama vartmana vartmane. Everyone is following the path of the Lord in all respect. Everyone is receiving a facility of the Lord through which he can act. The body that forms and that becomes our vehicle, that is not in our control. I have a few books lying open in my room so that I sometimes walk by and can read a little bit. Follow this system sometimes that I put everywhere in the room books that are open. And then I glance on them and then I read a page here and there like that. And that way get some extra meditations. So I was reading and in a diary of Satsarup Maharaj, and he was describing how he was walking in India in his first class American body, looking at the Indian body, right? And it seemed like here I'm walking around in my first class American body, with pockets full of rupees, right? 100 rupee note is change for me. And there are all those people to whom 100 rupees means a lot, right? And it is true. Here we are, born in the rich part of the world. Like yesterday, I went on a long drive with our Nisra Bhagavan. And when you sit in the car, you talk a bit here and there. So we were speaking about Europe and America, similarities and this, that. And at one point, he said that, yes, he says, it's very similar to America. He said, and anyway, this is the rich part of the world, just like America. Right, and it is true. This is the rich part of the world, just like America. Of course, rich. What is rich? Not really richy ditch, but rich. Right, something rich to some extent. Here we are. So with that, we have become so important. With that, our thoughts are so meaningful. With that, our opinions count. With that, right, we are somebody in the world. Right? But all that actually is a gift of Krishna, given according to our previous karma. Karmana daivane trena jantu dehu papatyate. That is actually the beginning of this chapter. And in that verse, it is explained that we are simply entering into the body by some divine arrangement. It is never our glory, but one doesn't know. One doesn't know what that particular body will have in store. One doesn't know. Just couple days ago, one devotee in South Africa, an old devotee in the yatra, who took a lot of responsibility for many years, who did a lot to push on Krishna consciousness, and who was a director of a supermarket. Right. He started a whole site in his supermarket called Divine Foods, where they were doing everything for the temple. Right? It was a vegetarian supermarket. And it was a whole session, just a business to make profits for the temple. So I think, such a nice man. There was a devotee who was very ill. He helped him. He took him in his house. He looked after. He was very gentle. A nice person. And then, devastating heart attack. Dropped dead in his shop. Not so old. What can be done? We don't know. We don't know what each body has in store. But it is mentioned in Bhagavatam that the number of breaths that we are actually having in each body is already fixed. That cannot be changed. Therefore, the destiny is already known. Tasyaiva heti prayate te kovido yad brahmatam talabhyate uparyada. It is a fact that we are going upwards and downwards into this universe. But happiness and distress, dugavat anyavat sukham, are not in our control. That is not in our control. That is all the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. That is all being governed by the intricate laws of the Supreme Lord. And by the intricate laws of the Supreme Lord, once the living entity is trapped in the womb, he'll have to go through all these things. He'll get, by the end of 3 months, nails, fingers, toes, body, hair, bones, skins, and he has to deal with all these things. Eyes, nostrils, ears, mouth, anus, and all these things, right? It is already known at what age he will have to put glasses, right? It is already known that these eyes are not going to do the job. Little does he know, as he is coming to consciousness in the womb, what is in store for him. Little does he know when he comes out of the womb and is shocked and first cries and thinks, where am I in a hostile environment? But then he is showered with love and affection by a mother who has been waiting for him so long, and he forgets his sorrows and thinks that actually it's nice. Until the next time he realizes that it is not nice. Then he cries like anything. But there she is again. No, no. Sweetie, everything is fine. Oh yes, everything is fine. Yes. And again, he thinks that everything is fine. And she comes and showers him with more and more love. And he's convinced now. Yes, it is. It is what I always wanted here. It is wonderful. Right. And again, he gets the surprise of his life. He falls on his face. He gets all kinds of experiences. Fingers in between the door. Oh my God. So many other varieties of suffering due to ignorance. Right? Unpleasant surprises. But mother is always there to remind him once again, don't worry, it's all right, it's all right, you know, it's okay, it's all right. And then we grow up, and the same thing goes on. But our wife, who loves us, will tell us, no, no, I love you. It's wonderful. We have the greatest thing. We have love. We have it. We have. There's nothing greater. We have. Yes. And you think, yes, I have it, love, it's beautiful. And now, together, we will express our love in the form of a child, which will be the combination of us, right? And we will live in this child, and our love will live in this child. And we will, in this child, we will realize our love. Right? Our love will grow. along with this child, which is the embodiment of our love. It's beautiful. A beautiful family life. Yes. So, in this way, one is dreaming until reality wakes us up cruelly, and reality is disturbing the whole thing, right? The love transforms. The love doesn't last. The wife doesn't love the husband.
Where have you been all this time? You know? What are you doing for me? Right? We need something. What are you doing for your children? You are not caring for your children.
And the boss is pushing at work, and there is talk that they will reorganize the company, and that at least 150 jobs have to go, and yours might be on the list, and you're just wondering, and you know that you may not so easily get another job, right, of the same stature, and you know that your salary is going to go down to at least 70 or 60% of what you were having, and you know that at home they need more, and you just think, my God. And the anxiety increases, the tension. And you develop a blood pressure problem and a slight heart problem. And the doctor says, calm down, take it easy now. Take care of your health, right? If you go on like this, you will not live a long life. So, little does the innocent child know, in the arms of his mother, what's waiting for him. Little does the innocent child know what the world has in store. Little does he know what life is all about. He is simply thinking, where is mom, right? Where is mom? And everything will be all right. As long as mom loves me, everything is great. What is wrong in the world? Gradually, we grow up. And we go beyond this illusion, and we know that even if mom loves us, that still, it's not enough. With all due respect to mom, right? We love mom too, but we know that in spite of that fact, right, there are many things that even mom can't solve. And in this way, we realize that as the years go by, that the material world is an intense situation. And many people become depressed with time. But the devotee has great fortune. A devotee can transform everything. So this is our business. Transformation. To become free from this whole experience. This chapter continues. And here, in the next verse, it already begins to describe the condition of the womb. So far, the embryo has been growing within the womb in this chapter, and everything seemed to be kind of real cozy. And psychologists make it out to be that this is the perfect state, and that sometimes when a person is in great mental stress, that he tends to go for the fetus position and goes again into hankering for that safe and secure position of the womb, right, from where he is been thrown into this cold and hostile world, right, and that we all in us have a deep hankering and longing for the womb, right. This is what modern psychology is trying to tell us, and they have even particular New Age therapy groups, rebirthing and all this kind of thing, you know, and you go into it again, right? You get into the mood, you know. I mean, it feels secure and like in the womb, and go through the whole thing again, right? The trauma of like taking birth. My God. You know, relive the trauma of taking birth. Phew. The original, the primeval trauma, right, of all living beings in this world. But little do they know that it began before. But Bhagavatam makes it clear that it begins, that this womb, right, is a place where life is not so comfortable. Of course, you know, for mothers, it is a little painful to have to mentally accept this, because, you know, it's nicer to kind of have the idea that the womb is a very nice, warm, pleasant place, and baby is very happy there, and mother also very happy with the baby, and everything is love and happy and wonderful, right? And like, it's all very, very nice. But when you go to the hospital, you know very well it's not all very nice. What comes out of our body and all the substances and secretions and nasty biting acid and things that are in there, the smell and the effect of that. And another point that was discussed in the car, that there were devotees in Sarajevo during the war who were doing prasadam distribution, and they were walking through the open sewage, waist deep, wading through the stool and the urine, right, which is floating about, right, carrying on their heads supplies for food for life, right. Well, are there any volunteers who want to walk in the stool and the urine, right? Anybody? Then he might be preparing himself for the next birth as a hog, right? If one develops a taste for these things, so one has to be careful. Nayam deho deha bhajam nirloke tapo, what is it? Kastan kaman aratam vidbujyam ye. The vidbujyam are the stool eaters. So, if one wants to become a stool eater, yes, it is possible. But no one, no sane person is actually appreciating such a thing. So, where our baby is quite close to that part of the body, right, where such substances are present. And that is meant here. The fetus grows and remains in that abominable residence of stools and urine, which is the breeding place of all kinds of worms. Yeah. I'm sorry to mention the next verse. But these are bodies. Our bodies, right? It's when a body dies, right? Then the worms eat that body, right? Now, where do you think these worms are coming from, right? Do you think that when a dead body is lying there, that suddenly from all directions you see worms coming, crawling on all that body? Do you think that's how it is? Oh, no, it's not. It's the worms from inside. There are many worms already inside. You keep a body in a sterile room, right? And the worms will start coming out, right? Oh, yes. The worms are already in our body, right? That's how it is, right? The worms that will devour that body are already within it. Anyhow, we are not so concerned. One could become very scared. Oh, no. But again, this is a sign of the mode of passion. The mode of passion is where we allow the mind to become so excited. Oh no, worms, oh my God, oh no, I never thought of this. Oh, this is horrible. I won't be able to sleep for a week, at least, maybe 2 weeks after hearing this. The mode of passion. Yes. Whatever is Krishna's arrangement is Krishna's arrangement. What have we got to do with these worms? Let the worms, let it be, let it be, let it be. If that's what the worms, if there are worms, let there be worms. Let there be germs. Let there be Let there be nails, fingers, toes, body, hair, bones, skins, organs of generation, eyes, nostrils, ears, mouth, and anus. And let us not have any illusions about these things. Right? Let us not think that these things are of great importance. All these things are having their requirements. All these organs, all these parts of the body need care, demand certain things from us. And we have to deal with that. But whatever we do, we should never harm our spiritual advancement. Eating, mating, sleeping, and defending are unavoidable as long as one is within the material body. But one should never do anything that will harm our spiritual advancement. That's all. And for the rest, anything goes. Anything goes. As long as our spiritual progress is guaranteed. So Bhagavatam is revealed to us for that purpose. To kind of remember our position in this world, how we are here, and that we somehow or other remain situated peacefully in the consciousness that we are the servant of Krishna, and that we are somehow or other acting upon this point of serving Krishna again and again. And if we do, then everything else we somehow or other try and minimize the suffering in this world as much as we can, as much as is practical, as much as is possible without making too much endeavor. We cannot go to the extent of working so hard trying to take away all suffering. We cannot. Suffering cannot be avoided. So at one stage one has to tolerate and has to learn to build up one's tolerance. In this way life goes on. And in this way we create a realistic platform for performing devotional service. And spiritual life becomes peaceful. But if Krishna, when Lord Ramachandra glanced on the ocean, and he wanted to cross to Lanka, the whole ocean became agitated. Right? It became agitated. And all the aquatics that were in that water suddenly felt totally uncomfortable because Lord Ramachandra was very angry. He wanted to, because his wife had been kidnapped, and he wanted to cross the ocean. And the whole ocean was agitated. And so if the Lord glances, then according to his desire, things will develop in a certain way. And we notice that. Sometimes the atmosphere is peaceful, and sometimes the atmosphere is agitated. And everyone is agitated. The whole world sometimes gets agitated everywhere, and you see it. You read it in the newspaper that countries are agitated, and at home your wife is agitated, and at work the people are also agitated, in the traffic people are agitated, everywhere people are agitated. We have seen sometimes. And this is not imaginary, because the three modes of material nature are not always the same. Sometimes they are peaceful, and sometimes they are agitated. But a devotee is internally always peaceful. And he must come to that point of cultivating this island of peacefulness. Initially in our heart was also all this agitation, but we must in our heart make an island of peacefulness, and that must grow. And in the middle of that heart, in that island is an island of purity, and in the middle of that heart are the lotus feet of Krishna. Right. When Krishna is in our heart of hearts, then sadaridaya kandare, if Krishna is deep in the cavity of our heart, in the innermost chambers of our heart, then we will become peaceful in favorable circumstances and in opposition. Within our heart, we will be peaceful. And this is very important. Sometimes the circumstances force our mind to respond and become very active and do something. But the advanced Vaishnava, he will, and he may have to deal with the agitation in his mind, but in his heart, he stays peaceful because he's not becoming attached. He doesn't carry all this stress and anxiety with him any further than that moment. He doesn't roll over in all night in bed from, why is this all happening? It is so much. He's remembering Krishna. Sometimes the problems are so intense and difficult that one has to think about it. Sometimes there is also stress for the pure devotee. But still, in his heart, he's always remembering Krishna. So, let us just do that. Let us just get absorbed in chanting, and chanting, and chanting. In kirtan, in bhajan, in japa, in reading, in hearing. And let us just there take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. And we'll overcome the cycle of birth and death. Any questions, any comments?
Yeah. When somebody else is agitated, then the natural becomes dissatisfied. But what to do in the case? How to be peaceful again?
How great are the pure devotees?
No. If one has a service that agitates, or might agitate the mind of others, how to be peaceful?
It was Srila Prabhupada's service to agitate the mind of others. Because Srila Prabhupada had to come and had to tell him, stop what you're doing. You cannot do this anymore. This is not right. Who are you to tell us? Right. Prabhupada had to tell the proud Americans, that everything you're doing is wrong. So it was very difficult. Right? Therefore, when Prabhupada was at the Boston Pier, Prabhupada said, how can I tell them anything? How can I convince these people? I can only repeat your words, he said. Right? So that's the only way. The only way is to repeat the words of Krishna. But not like a tape recorder. We are not walking tape recorders. We must present them with a heart. And that was Prabhupada's wonderful quality, that he was so much human, that he had so much heart, that he was so much just a wonderful person in human dealings, and then had this most exalted, wonderful philosophy. Then we can convince people. There's that story of the parents of Giriraj Maharaj. Giriraj Maharaj's parents came to India to meet Prabhupada, and they were very wealthy, and they wanted their son to come back to America. So the mother was saying to Prabhupada that, oh, I am very worried. I really don't want my son to stay in India. He may get sick, and then, you know, he'll become very weak, and he always had a bit of a, you know, weak health, and I'm very, very worried about my son. So I hope you please send him back to America. And then the idea is, when he's in America, then he's closer to his parents, and then he can sometimes come home, and then we can influence him, and then we can try and make him an offer, you know, and then we try and get him back. Right? That was the plan. So she was speaking like this, and Prabhupada was saying, ah, yes, yes. He was listening, and at one point, Prabhupada had some sandesh brought out. And he told the mother, please, please take some of this sandesh. It is very nice. And she said, oh, no, 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 no. And Prabhupada said, well, you try some, just a little. It is really very, very nice. And he kept on speaking like that. And then finally she took some, and then Prabhupada very expertly just says, nice, a little more. And she took a little more, and she took several pieces of sandesh. And she was... And Prabhupada did it in a very charming way. And it was very nice. And then Prabhupada said, and he said, yes. He said, and this sandesh is not only very tasty. He said, actually, it is also very healthy. He said, it's full of protein and like that. He said, and I will make sure that your Giriraj every day will get a number of these sandeshes so that he will stay strong and healthy. Right? So like this, you know. Later on, when his parents came out of the room, then his father said that, he said, your Prabhupada, he said, he's very intelligent. He's very intelligent. Right? And then the secretary was also there. And the secretary said that, Prabhupada, everybody loves you so much. And Prabhupada said, that is because I love everybody. And in this way, this is the way. This is the only way that one can tell people something they don't want to know, they don't want to hear. And that one can make people do something they don't want to do. We have adopted so many things. I mean, if I look at myself, so many things I've accepted that I would have never, ever done for anyone, you know. But somehow or other, because Prabhupada was such a wonderful person, we've done it. So this is the only way. Mahajana yena gata sapant. Prabhupada showed how to do. How to come to what? To love everybody. Prabhupada says, when you love Krishna, right, then you'll automatically love everybody. Because when you love the body, you love finger also, he says. If you love the body, you automatically love the finger also. So if you love Krishna, and you see that Krishna is caring for all living beings, he's the friend of all living beings, then automatically we become the well-wisher of all living beings. So then we can develop this love for everybody. Therefore, love for everybody can only come from love of Krishna. And love of Krishna, guess how you get that? It's the same old story. It's only one way, one way, one way, one way. Chanting of the holy name and devotional service. Then once we are engaged in devotional service, then we have to refine. It's like in the beginning, the thing is to begin to surrender to the process and take it up, to make sambandha, to make the connection. Then the next stage is abhideya, to refine the process that we're following. We become more and more aware that it's not only that we're doing it, but how we're doing it. It's not only that we chant 16 rounds, but how are we chanting 16 rounds? It's not only that we are living with the Vaishnavas, but how are we living with the Vaishnavas? So how becomes more and more important. This is abhideya, the process. And then prayojana will be reached, the ultimate goal, love of God will be reached. Then you can really love everybody.
So many things are already known at your birth. So, of course, this is said in the Bhagavad Gita, I know past, present, future.
Yep.
So then, how do we have any...
Independence. Free will issue. Yeah. Prabhupada addresses that issue in reference to that verse that I quoted, Tasyaiva Heta Prayateta Kovido. And a devotee asks, so does that mean that everything is predestined? And Prabhupada said, yes, until you become a devotee. He says, but until you become a devotee, everything is predestined. Right? He said, but when you become a devotee, then Krishna will give you that independence by which you can actually change your destiny. You're not speaking clear, so I cannot hear it. There is not. What's the second word?
Philosopher.
There's a philosopher. Brahma is the cause of suffering. Brahman is the cause of suffering. What can we say? You know, like, there are philosophers who hear, who pick up some terms and then start bouncing them around as if they are balls to play with. There is a science. And when we're discussing the subject matter of Brahman, right, then that is not a subject matter for speculation. But rather one can only understand the nature of Brahman through authorized sources. So the Vedic literatures give us the proper understanding of Brahman. And any other philosopher who develops his own philosophy about Brahman that is different from the conclusions of the Vedic literatures is simply involved with a perverted reflection of true knowledge. So such a person is somewhere caught up in the modes of material nature. So there are many philosophies that are arising from the modes of material nature. And such philosophies have no significance, no meaning. They're like bubbles in the ocean. And we should not become impressed by them, no matter in how sophisticated the form is in which these philosophies are being presented. Sometimes the form in which such philosophies are presented is so expertly arranged that it looks impressive, but the substance is totally useless. So we are not caring very much about form. We're looking at substance. And all knowledge is being revealed by the Supreme Lord. Veda is the source of all knowledge. And if there's any knowledge that differs from Veda, it's a perverted reflection. Like Prabhupada saying, when they discuss philosophers, and Shamasundar is saying, in the 20th century, the philosophers are presenting philosophy that is becoming more and more complicated. Prabhupada is saying, why is it becoming more and more complicated? Nothing has changed. The rising and the setting of the sun is still the same. He said, so why is the philosophy becoming more complicated when nothing has changed? He said, it's because life under the sun has become more complicated, that the philosophy is more complicated. So this is the condition. But nothing has changed. The fundamental issues of life are fundamental. Brahman is Brahman. Bhagavan is Bhagavan. Paramatma is Paramatma. And that will never change. Prakriti is Prakriti. And all these things are as they are explained in the Bhagavatam. And those who don't accept, nonsense rascals.
I have a statement that resurrected souls and the conditioned souls, they both, all of them serve Paramatma.
Liberated souls and conditioned souls, serve Paramatma. Well, that's what I already said from Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is walking my path in all respects, Krishna says. Right? So everyone is walking my path in all respects. No one, the Uttama Adhikari's vision is that every living entity is serving the Lord. The demons are also serving the Lord. They are causing the hell for the sinful living entities so that they suffer. So they are like freelance Yamadutas, right, who are causing enough trouble. So that's possible. Everyone is somehow or other part of the Lord arrangements. Yeah. If I steal, right, I cause suffering to someone who has wealth. Right. That person will become purified from his attachment to the wealth by that suffering. Right. I, on the other hand, get entangled and will get reactions for it. So although I'm a rascal, at the same time, I'm also acting as an instrument of the Lord. I'm serving Paramatma. In that sense, we're always serving. But there's another part in me that is rebelling against Paramatma at the same time, standing up against him, and that will never, never surrender. Never. Right? But I can't escape. Right? I'm caught up. We are all caught up in Paramatma's world. Yeah. What are we going to do? In all directions you go, you can't escape. Durga, very difficult to get out. You cannot get out. We're caught up totally. Just as Krishna expands himself into various forms, the various Vishnu expansions, in the same way Srimati Radharani also expands herself into various forms. And then we see that yatada divikara visesa yogat, that at one point the Vishnu tattva transforms and that we get Shiva tattva, right? There is like milk turns into yogurt, remember? That's that there's a mixture of the Vishnu tattva expansion with the mode of ignorance and somehow or other, and then at that point a new tattva manifests, Shiva tattva. So that Shiva tattva has its counterpart in Durga, right? And Durga in that way is ultimately also an expansion of Srimati Radharani. And Lakshmi also, because but once it comes to the expansion of Durga in this world, then we are dealing with the transformed, yeah? Just like Shiva is transformed. He's became yogurt from the milk. He's no longer has all the Vishnu tattva shakti. Yeah? He doesn't have that power anymore. Said like a He's like a lamp still, but he's become covered with the soot, the black, you know, that comes on the glass of a oil lamp. So in the same way, Durga Devi, Lakshmi Devi, all these deities find their origin in Srimati Radharani. But transformation has taken place. So, because of being mixed with the material energy, so that they can act as the counterpart of the transformed aspect of Vishnu, which has become Shiva, then his counterpart is Parvati or Durga. Like that? Yes. So, Krishna is also giving his, uses his energies, right? And when he appears, then the Maya energy is also working in his favor. And she's like a devotee of Krishna. So she's one of Krishna's energies. And in that sense, she is Shakti Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. And therefore, Krishna will, through that, perform his works. So in that way, Subhadra is an expansion of the Lord's Shakti Tattva. And through her, he performs his works, sometimes to establish spiritual ends. That's all. Shakti Tattva. It's not that we cannot pray, but it's not very much stressed. Right? So we can pray, and we may feel, well, I am in a woman's body, so I feel especially also some affiliation to pray to a female form. Right? But that's all right, we can. But the best prayers are the prayers of the acharyas, right? We are taught to pray as they are doing. Yeah. So we don't find, like, you know, so many prayers of the acharyas to Subhadra, right? They pray to Krishna and Balaram. So therefore, let's pray to Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram are mentioned in the Maha Mantra. Subhadra not directly. Of course, Hare is referring to the Shakti Tattva, Srimati Radharani, and the Ladini Shakti. And in that way, that Tattva is also present. But still, generally speaking, we're not stating that Hare represents Subhadra, although Subhadra is in the Shakti Tattva category. Yeah. So if you want to, generally we may pray to Srimati Radharani in that case. But too much praying to Srimati Radharani is very high. It's for the self-realized bhaktas. Therefore, it is said that those who are conditioned, they should pray to Lord Nityananda. Those who are liberated, they can pray to Srimati Radharani. So our main prayers should be directed towards Lord Nityananda. Therefore, Prabhupada always made it a point. Open a preaching center, Panchatattva. Put Panchatattva there. Panchatattva picture, and then deities of Gornitai. That's the main program that Prabhupada had, Gornitai everywhere. Right? So, because we need Lord Nityananda. We need the mercy of Lord Nityananda, like anything. Right? So you can pray to Subhadra sometimes. My dear Srimati Subhadra, please help me to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Right? But we need the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Yes. So, Balaram. Yes, Lord Nityananda. So let's pray to Lord Nityananda. Because we are fallen. Even if we don't act fallen, by inclination we are fallen. Therefore, we need extra help. We are weak, because by inclination we are fallen. By inclination we are sinful. And we have to fight it, always, with intelligence and, you know, chanting, Hare Krishna, reading, and then we can fight it. But by nature we're fallen. So, therefore we should pray to the most merciful, Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya.
Would you like to say more about the topic of Lord Nityananda? If you entered mercy on the door for some point.
Yeah, last night we dealt with it extensively, you know. That Lord Nityananda is not considering if one is following the rules and regulations of the scriptures. Lord Nityananda is always responding to service attitude to Lord Chaitanya or Krishna. So if anyone has a service attitude to Lord Krishna, even if that person is not following the rules and regulations, still Lord Nityananda will give him mercy. This is the point. So therefore, whereas Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Paricheyam Amekam Saranam Braja, just follow the principles of prescribed duties in devotional service. But Lord Nityananda, no. Lord Nityananda will, even if one is not following the rules and regulations, still give one mercy if one is rendering service. Yes. Not that one blatantly is not caring about the rules and regulations, but when one is so conditioned by the modes of material nature, that in spite of trying, one just cannot make it with the rules and regulations. Still, Lord Nityananda will never forsake such a person. This is the point. Now, last night we elaborated on it with stories and examples, etc. I mean, I cannot do that now, so early or so late in the morning, as we are about to leave and still have to pack and still have to chant and have to do so many things. But Lord Nityananda is especially looking at the service attitude. And if there's a service attitude, he'll be purchased. He'll be purchased. Even if a person is from the most fallen background. So then one can very quickly be lifted. If you have the mercy of Lord Nityananda, suddenly you can see that someone from a very fallen background can suddenly very quickly understand many things about devotional service. That's the mercy of Lord Nityananda, without a doubt. Otherwise, a sinful person can never understand Krishna. Never. Jai Nityananda. Thank you.